The cover is like me covered in ice cream. And I think this actual took a yeah, that's like this. So I actually showed up to a photographer and was like, I'm gonna cover myself in ice cream. And the whole concept was, well, as a person, I'm a dessert fiend. But also I was trying to make the analogy that life is like ice cream and it's something you enjoy in the moment, in the present moment, because otherwise it melts.
To reason with someone is to motivate them to do or accept topics, ideas, and issues through discussion and having conversations.
This podcast is about the relationship with ourself and the relationship with others, finding our stability and our self-worth, and how do we actually be in healthy relationships. We find this out through connection, compassion, and communication. Reach out, connect with me, like, subscribe, comment. I want to unpack whatever it is that we can to really get to the nitty and gritty of finding out how do we get better in ourselves and how do we get better in our relationships.
Welcome back to the podcast, Reason With Me. Hello, everybody. I'm just going to quickly ask, if you are listening to this, if you do like what you're listening to, please, please reach out. Please review on Google or Apple or Spotify. Please leave us 5 stars. This helps it reach other people and allow for more connection and more depth within our society and our world. Hope you enjoy this one.
Welcome back to the podcast. Today I am speaking with Ricky, aka the boy under the bridge. Ricky's a counselor based in Melbourne, Australia. He works predominantly with men, supporting them to step into more self-compassionate and empowering narratives. He loves to write and loves to blog over at theboyunderthebridge.com. A really cool guy, interesting, down to earth, funny, and just overall grounded and insightful person to have a chat with. So jump on in with me and Ricky.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. I'm here with Ricky, boy under the bridge. We finally are able to do this. Thanks so much for your patience and finally getting on with me, Ricky.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man, I'm really glad you're here. I don't know how we stumbled across each other, but I think it, whatever made it happen, it happened, and here we are doing this sort of thing. And I'm keen to jump on into it. How you're in Melbourne, right? Yeah.
Melbourne, yeah.
Yeah. What's the weather at the moment? Because in Sydney, it's bipolar, you know? It's a little bit up and down.
Gotta love a DSM on the weather system. Today's a bit overcast, but it is, we're in, like, you know, heading to warmer times, which is a much needed relief because winter here is pretty brutal. I used to live in Sydney and originally from Queensland. So, I've been in Melbourne for about 6 years, but still getting used to the cold.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why I've had a few Queenslanders move down there. I'm like, you know what you're doing. So, I mean, you've obviously found a nice place in it, staying there for 6 years. But anyway. Nothing about the weather. We're going to get way more deep than that. So let's jump straight into it. Ricky, tell me, who the hell are you and what do you do?
Name's Ricky, 36 years young. I'm a counselor, youth worker as well. And on top of that, you know, a writer and speaker. I have a platform called Boy Under the Bridge, and that started in 2013. 2010, I was just a person going through shit and a young man, a lot of stigma around mental health. I didn't know where to turn. So I turned to a journal and I just started to spill my feelings. And that really just was the catalyst for this life I have today. From there, I also found personal development, you know, personal growth, reading about stuff. And my writing became a bit more better, like improved in writing and the quality of what I was writing in my journals and the conversations I was having. And then a good friend just said, why didn't you open a blog? So I thought, why not? Because, you know, I kind of found as I moved through my own shit, I'd found this role as, you know, the go-to person, the guy with a lot of insight. And I genuinely enjoyed the kind of role that I played in my friendships. So I opened up WordPress and thought, like, you know, what should I call it? And Boy Under the Bridge just kind of rolled off the tongue, but also had reference to, in Brisbane where I grew up, there's a bridge called the Gateway Bridge, and lovely, huge structure. And underneath they had this park, really beautiful place. And I used to find myself sitting there with friends, just having these really deep conversations about life, watching the water. And that just came to mind. And I think part of me wanted to, you know, have a bit of anonymity, so I could kind of say what I needed to say without necessarily attaching my name to it. And then from there, like I just ran with that and gained a bit of followers and whatnot. Wrote a book called Living in Cream, which is covered in ice cream on the front cover. So this was really me, you know, really coming out and telling everyone my story about everything I'd been through. And then eventually, fast forward a couple of years working in the corporate world, I got diagnosed with ADHD, which I think I read on your blog as well.
Yeah, you and me both, bud.
And that was really that shake-up moment. I had worked in the mental health content space, and what helped me get those roles was my writing and everything like that. But then I was at that point of going, okay, ADHD, how do I treat this? I read Scattered Minds, Gabor Mate's work, a lot of other books. And they pretty much shared the story of the kind of approach that it's not a really disorder, but it's something that you can use to your advantage and something you can use if you lean into your strengths. So I thought, okay, change your career, and picked counseling.
Yeah, man. Love that. So what?
Yeah.
What, when you say lean into your strengths, Ricky, like how, how did the, what were the strengths in terms of like your ADHD and learning, I guess, you know, your unique you, what part of that made counseling the path?
Yeah, I think it was my understanding, like, of, you know, like basic psychology concepts, emotional intelligence, and just having a sort of, like most ADHD people do, this sort of filter for the bullshit and despising sort of the superficial. I was a people person, no matter what job I had. A big component of, you know, what I enjoyed about the role was connecting with the people there, and not just on the, like, how's your weekend, but like on a deeper level, you know, those one-on-one lunchtime chats and everything like that. And also I think just my ability to communicate, to take in information, synthesize it, but also deliver it in a unique, understandable way. And actually prior to that, I had my first qualification was in marketing. So there was a bit of an overlap in my ability to, like, you know what drives people, what their pain points are. But I guess where marketing sort of uses that for exploitation and to make profit, counseling is about, like, understanding that, meeting them there, being empathetic, and working with them in a way to, you know, empower them to take positive steps, changes in their life.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, that sort of comes through being a communicator and being able to then express that through writing, is great. I know for me, you know, there, and maybe not so much, but your ADHD for me, like, there's so much creativity. I feel like I've got this, like, swollen brain sometimes. I'm like, I just need it to kind of get out of me, and in a way that I'm like, you know, and through creativity, it's really helpful. And obviously you found that in the writing, and then writing No Filter, or, you know, through all the bullshit and just going, here it is, here's some raw authentic shit of what I'm going through. And I guess creativity must be an important part of that.
100%. You know, the first book that I wrote, Living in Cream, like, you know, it's a lot of it is about me expressing not only my lived experience, mental health, but tapping into my creativity by creating this piece of work together, taking photos and everything like that. And then following that, as I started working more, I definitely noticed, you know, a decline in my own well-being. And that was due to me being really busy and not accepting the importance that creativity plays. I think I fell into the mindset of like, oh, okay, I don't make money for this. It's not related to my career directly. You know, it's just for fun. And that really, you know, was killing the inner child in me. And, you know, since then I realized like, hey, this makes me feel good. And even though, you know, I don't make much money from selling my books or anything like that, more of a, you know, self-publisher or everything, but it's still very valuable to my well-being.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's really where you know, pull a lot of strength from, I imagine. Like it's like an anchor. I mean, we happen to be getting paid for the work that we do, I guess, but it sounds like the passion's bigger than that. You know, it's much more about being able to express and connect and, you know, live through that a little bit more. So obviously there's a bit more of a story than just the ADHD to this, and I guess the writing does speak a little bit about that, but can you give us a little bit of an insight without going too much into depth, because I'd love people to, you know, jump in and buy Living with Cream, but that'd be different. But the tell me if you're willing, tell us a little bit about I guess the idea of it all, Living in Cream.
Yeah, the cover is like me covered in ice cream. And I think this actual so I actually showed up to a photographer and was like, I'm gonna cover myself in ice cream. And the whole concept was, well, as a person, I'm a dessert fiend. Yeah. But also I was trying to make the analogy that life is like ice cream, and it's something you enjoy in the moment, in the present moment, because otherwise it melts. So that's how, like, you know, life is past slipping you by. Enjoy it while it's there, and don't be afraid to, you know, make a mess for the sake of, you know, enjoying it. And I just basically outline, you know, my initial dark night of the soul, and then all the things that I found to help me, like journaling, music, dance, really connecting with humor, and then just a whole bunch of philosophies of, you know, things that I had digested through my personal development growth. And then sort of, this is me just synthesizing what has helped and going here. It's by all means not prescriptive with anything, but I'm like, these are the tools that worked for me. But also, this is just my story of someone who says, I've been there and I've come through the other side and really embraced my identity. And, you know, hopefully it lights a fire in people's bellies.
Yeah. Well, if anything else, maybe we'll have some nice ice cream, right?
Yeah.
Go and treat yourself.
Yeah, like, treat yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So 2013, I'm not good at maths, but I guess that's, you know, you were doing some other things before then. So was there a path of like your own therapy and stuff prior to that, before the journaling kind of kicked into gear? Or was there kind of, you said it was a tool that helped you get through, and that's what helped shift things over. Was that the first tool you grabbed?
Yeah, well, I think initially I went to see, you know, I was just not in a good place. And through childhood, like I didn't really have any much resilience, because I had almost like a childhood that was too good. So all of a sudden I was hit with this like circumstances, a breakup, I'm graduating university, couldn't find work. A lot of change in my life, and I just didn't have the ability to really handle it. So it did hit me a bit hard. I saw a GP, and unfortunately I remember her just saying like, did you want to go on antidepressants? It was really weird. And I was like, oh no. And I kind of backed off, and then I made the decision to sort of like get through this myself. I was very involved in fitness at the time, and was on bodybuilding.com and the forums. It was like the biggest fitness related forum in the world. They had subsections where people talked about anything, and I found a lot of other guys going through similar stuff through these threads, and really fell into like the personal development world there. Was able to have really honest conversations because I was behind a username. And so that really, you know, was the catalyst. And then I became more open with friends, like privately, about what I was going through. I didn't actually see, like, that was 2010 that all started, but I didn't see a therapist for the first time till I think 2013. When I had other changes in my life.
Okay. Cool. Well, I think that even all that exploration, right? It's finding your way through it all, and yeah, the same thing happened to me. I think GP was like, "Well, have you heard of antidepressants?" And I'm like, "If that's what you've got, you know." And that was me while studying, you know, doing psychology. I'm like, "How is this the option? And where are the others?" And tried that, didn't work. Plateaued me out, sucked the demons out of me, but then also made me pretty placid and plateauing. So it wasn't a quick one for me. Obviously does serve a lot of people, but I definitely needed to couple it with some other stuff, which I wasn't really doing. I like that it's kind of the, you know, when the world kind of gets intense and you go, oh shit, I gotta not be spoon fed all this stuff anymore, and I'm gonna figure it out, and smash you in the face a little bit and guts real hard real quick. It's cool to be able to then connect with other men, and it seems like the behind the screen, or you know, with aliases, is a path that I guess a lot of probably men, but also obviously lots of young people and women as well, or anyone really, that is sort of finding a bit more safety in doing that. That was the approach to start with. It's like, this is all going to allow me no filter, and I can express more vulnerably.
Yeah, it was only till I was working on the book, and then I was like, well, you know, it's going to be by the alias Boy Under the Bridge, but I'm in the photos. So I was at a sort of decision point where I was like, this is attaching my face to everything. And I thought into the future and imagined, like, you know, my future employer Googling me and then seeing these photos of me half naked dripping in ice cream. But then I thought, like, am I going to, you know, sacrifice my authenticity and live my life on some hypothetical person? And I thought, like, what if I actually lent into who I am, and that could be a differentiator in a real positive sense? So I just was like, fuck it. Went all in. And, you know, the Boy Under Bridge essentially at the start was a sort of alias, but at the same time, I think I was creating a new identity for myself, not just one to hide behind, but it was really like this sort of what I call, when I work with clients, is like, you know, my superhero. And I think particularly, you know, a lot of young boys grow up playing with action figures, and we certainly really attach ourselves to a certain sort of heroic archetype. And I think, although we stop, you know, doing that, we stop, put the figures away, maybe, I don't know, maybe you still play with action figures, maybe I do, really, but there's something to be said about still invoking that sense of imagery, and seeing that, you know, seeing ourselves in this completely new light, because I think it allows one to separate themselves from their current identity, and really, yeah, it's empowering.
The whole concept of that I really like, and maybe we don't have to spend too much time on this, but I guess the little gems, as you sort of, you know, I love that you're sort of rebuilding your own identity and kind of leaning into that and creating this authentic you. You're having to sort of take this stance of, you know, if I'm going to put myself out there, then I'm going to, this is me, this is how I'm going to do that. So, I mean, that's where it all comes down to. And I guess this is what this podcast is all about, is that self worth, you know, how we're going to show up in the world, how we're going to show up in relationships, and then really kind of underlining all that is through the power of connection. So what was it like to kind of come to grips with it? And that might be, not just as you were putting your photos on there to announce that this is you sort of thing, but the self-worth piece, how did that become something that you were tackling and then, I guess, overcoming as well?
Yeah, I think, at the time when I was writing the book, like I went and lived and volunteered on the island of Tonga for a year, so a little island in the South Pacific. And prior to that, I was very involved in fitness and so bodybuilding. So a lot of my self-worth and identity was attached to how I looked physically. At that time, you know, it was very, you know, the rest of the world sort of really endorse that, because people are always like, hey, you're fit, you know, you go to festivals without a shirt, people are like, thumbs up and all that shit. So going over there really forced me to do the self-worth sort of work and really look at, you know, the characteristics of my personality rather than these sort of external achievements you know, societal sort of markers.
Yeah.
And then through the work, I really connected with, you know, that inner child. And the term, like, you know, boy under the bridge, I used boy, not like man, because that is a reference to, you know, the inner child and that essence that we all have as a young person, then tend to lose as we get older, the ability to play, to be unconditionally accepting of ourselves and just, you know, not to be too neurotic about the future.
Yeah. I guess those core beliefs that get carved into us early on become something that are hard to then see that, you know, when we're reactive in that, it's that little boy that's kind of saying, hey, I just want to be seen. I just want to be heard. Stop taking me to the freaking bodybuilding. I just want to, you know, be loved in a different way. And I guess that's cool that shift. And I guess even just the position you put yourself in to be able to actually have the space to question that. And yeah, I guess as you said, re-identify and reconnect back to that part of you, is really, really powerful. And, yeah, I mean, it's cool to be able to hear that come through for lots of people, and I love hearing about it. So then I guess from there, how early on, and I guess people that don't know, I'd love you to talk a little bit about it, but the little gems of notes or little love letters that you're kind of putting up around the place.
Oh, yeah.
This is something that I guess was really caught my eye, I guess, because, you know, it's sort of the messages of worth that you're kind of sending through for yourself, but then also for somebody else to read. I imagine had a really big impact on some people that we might not ever hear about that might have just picked it up one day. So, yeah, if you could tell us that little, take us on a journey through that thing, because it is something I love.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, I wrote the book and really connected writing with positive messages, and, you know, I was writing not just for myself as a cathartic experience, but also for other people. So I had this sort of book in physical and ebook format to share with the world. I moved to Sydney, did a stint in Sydney, and one thing that really inspired me there was just, you know, the street art and the way creativity was celebrated differently to Brisbane, where I grew up. Brisbane's a very football flags and jerseys everywhere and that, and then Sydney was very like multicultural and really really into the art scene, so I loved that. And the street art stood out to me immediately, and I was like, I want to get on board with that. And I tried doing like paste ups and drawings, and I quickly found that I just could not do that very well. And I was like, okay, my vibe is words. How can I bring that to the street rather than having a website and book? And I immediately thought, like, I saw it on Instagram at the time, people were really getting into quotes, but they would get all these typewriter fonts for their images and do that. And then it was on Instagram. I thought, why don't I do that? But I'll get a real typewriter. And instead of putting things on Instagram, I'll put them on the street. So I started just typing up messages on stickers and pieces of card and would stick them up around the place. And Sydney was a tough time for me just to sort of adjust. So in a way, what I was doing was like sticking these things up on the routes that I'd go to and from work. And I mean, it was there for other people, but it was also there for a reminder for me. And people would find them and tag me and, you know, I'd chat to them on Instagram. But the reason you came across it was, you know, I had this moment of virality during the lockdown, so I moved to Melbourne the next year and then did it here and there in Melbourne. But it was during the lockdown because all people could do was walk. So people were doing a lot of walking, which meant really noticing the things that I was writing up. And I just received a lot of positive messages being like, oh, you know, it's really spiced up my day. And that was a period where everyone was going through it, you know. So there was a real need for it. And then I sort of put two and together and was like, oh, I'll do this more. And then someone messaged me and was like, you know, I really enjoy the surprise of looking out for them. And I was like, it kind of clicked. I was like, I will do this, but what I'm going to do is I use the app Strava. So the Strava is that app where you can kind of track your cycling and running movements. But what I would do is actually turn on Strava, go put them up, and then I could upload to Instagram the route that I walked. And then people would actually know where to walk, and then they could go look for them. And I'd say, hey, I put 25 on this path. And then they could go, and it would kind of mean that they're within their 5 kilometer bubble or whatever it was, but at the same time, enjoyed a bit of novelty in their day. And I received a lot of positive messages, and then a newspaper, and sort of picked up on it. Then I was on, you know, had 5 minutes on TV. And
everything. I mean, that's definitely how I heard it, and I loved it, because I think that, you know, just little quotes have such a big impact sometimes. You know, it's the difference between sometimes like a really bad rest of day and one that's lighter because of something that, I mean, we've got you know, in an insane amount with Instagram. If you follow the right people, there's quotes for, you know, breakfast, lunch and dinner. But, you know, what makes it more special is they're kind of like coming across it, you know, and I think that that's really cool. I'm yet to find one. I don't know. I have to come down to Melbourne and maybe check out. Or maybe I'll just
follow there is one in Sydney. I still get tagged because I went to Sydney last year, and I still get tagged. It's near it might be on the way to like Bondi and Coogee, because I always frequent that area because I love the coastal walk. So
okay, all right, well I'll
I think there's like a little pie cafe that I there's one at.
Amazing, that's so good. So do you have like I'll put you on the spot, do you have a go-to quote that would be your favorite, almost meaningful to you?
There's one that I use a lot, and it's endings aren't everything. The point of some stories is that they're still going.
Yeah. I got a semicolon tattoo on my wrist. It keeps going.
Love it.
That's so cool. I love that. I mean, that's just such a cool little way that you're spreading out the creativity in lots of different avenues. And I imagine that's why people want to come and connect and get more from you. I guess it's the importance of being you and expressing you. I mean, what does that kind of mean to you, being authentically yourself?
I think it just means that it means, you know, actual connection, that people can connect with you, not just this sort of image that you portray to get in the door or to be, you know, accepted. And as a therapist as well, it means that people can make, you know, an informed decision about who they work with. I work with predominantly guys in their 20s and 30s, and they really resonate with the whole like adventure sort of thing. I'm creating that sort of hero and that angle of sort of like self empowerment, which is why, you know, I liked what you were doing, because the name itself, Fun Reason, it's all about, you know, like heading into the storm, taking it on, and you know, you use a mountain in your logo, so about pushing like to that sort of pinnacle or that point. And that's really what I do when I work with clients as well.
And finding that,
encouraging them to journal actually. And it's funny, one thing I actually do is like, it's on my little party trick, is to show them this bag I have of journals, and that's over a decade. So I'm just like, you know, this is your life, and this is the time that you know, if they're in their 20s, or like this is the time ahead of you right now, and like what are you going to fill those days with? You know, and they're just like, it's all almost like a bit of a sort of paradigm transcendent moment, because they're just looking at time. And I'll even open a page and just show them like whatever it lands on, and be like, hey, this is me spilling my guts, and you know, I've felt what you're feeling, and it's really powerful.
I mean, it is so powerful. And I guess even more so, it's very, very stereotypical of me to say this, but I guess for men to then pull out some books, write shit down, and then talk about their feelings, or just, you know, go with whatever comes, is a challenge. You know, so how do you find that when you're like, all right, I want to get you to start journaling. How do people sit with it? I mean, maybe that's why they're there for you, but I guess, yeah. What's your view on the journaling sort of thing and people's thoughts and feelings about it?
Well, definitely. I often start, I start the session, the very first session, by just acknowledging the courage to be there before we do anything, before anything changes, like just the courage they're showing.
Yeah.
And then as I've sort of developed that sort of connection with them and they're feeling a bit open and able to identify feelings and talk about themselves, then I'm like, hey, why don't you carry on this process between sessions? And then I introduced the idea of journaling. There is initially resistance. Like, I kind of feel like a teacher checking in on homework sometimes, but I just keep selling it because, it's not just for their own well-being, but also, it saves them money because, it's like getting extra sessions and it's just that process of really externalizing what they're going through.
Yeah.
And then being able to reflect on it. It's easy to reflect when it's sort of on paper and you'll physically, have a different perspective because you're looking in.
Getting it out of the mind and actually onto something else is a really powerful process. Is there like a go-to style of journaling, or is there something that does it come with like prompts? How do you lead people into it, or what is something you kind of recommend when it comes to journaling?
I say, like, to begin with, just have some basic prompts but then answer them with just bullet points. So it's more about like answering like, what was the highlight of today? .. What was the challenge? .. For that challenge, like, what is the approach I'll take different next time? Sentence. Gratitude. .. And just run with that to begin with. And then as you develop the ability to sort of let things flow and just express, then start winging it. But initially having prompts is definitely the way to go.
That's always good. I something that I struggle with, I think it's the time, it's the all right, now I've got to do this and trying to mapping it out in my day. That I mean, I just ran a 2024 intentions workshop, which was all about running through your goals and writing down how you're actually going to get there. So it's not resolutions, it's intentions. And I go, when I do this, because I'm writing and it's flowing and it's, based on some prompts as well.
Okay.
And it was really, really good. And I go, why am I doing more of this? And, I mean, it's inspiring, right? You just lift it up friggin' 100 journals, crazy amount of journals that you're obviously utilizing quite a lot, and then finding so much creativity, but then also, I guess, relief and pause as well. What would you say the main takeaways from it for you are? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like, what's the key thing that makes it so rewarding or forgiving for yourself?
I think it's just that ability to, like, as you write, you process. But naturally, the way you write, when it comes to especially writing about the future, you are really harnessing in on that intention. And then there's just the sort of ability, which is really unique. Like, you can give me a date within the last 10 years and it might take a bit of work, but I could find that day and exactly tell you about my emotional state and what was going on, and if for example, if I was to say to you, pick a random date, like, unless that was extremely significant, you'd probably be like, I think I had baked beans for breakfast, I don't know, like, whatever. It'd just be this sort of long shot. But with that becomes this power of perspective and the ability to really measure our progress and you really reflect on the growth and appreciate the growth that we have done. Because otherwise, I think it's C.S. Lewis that says, day by day nothing changes, but when you look back everything's different. That can be very powerful for people. And then there's just the ability, especially with I'd say, with neuroplasticity, and you develop this ability because you're going to be reflecting at the end of each day. In a way, my brain now is so wired to, like, remember things, not just say the biggest thing of the day, but actually point out, oh, this is a grateful kind of, this is a moment of connection, or this is going to be a thing of gratitude. It really just harnesses your sort of attention. And at the end of the day, when you come to writing grad, like it's science is there. Like when you do the gratitude list and that process, you're really deepening into something that you feel, and you feel it a lot more versus like if it just was the back of your mind and forgotten about.
Yeah. Okay. So bringing it to the front and actually taking back some of the moments, otherwise they quickly go past, and we can very quickly get back into the hustle and bustle, and this sort of slows you down. Yeah. So are you doing that, like, is that a daily practice?
It is. I try to, at the end of each day, do at the least a few sort of dot points or sentence, or just write down anything that was empowering or something that inspired, motivated me. Sometimes I look at my journal and be like, okay, this has been pretty sparse. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like you said, you did the intentions sort of work workshop. I started this year with a real commitment. So, you know, used Notion, and I've set up a lot of like goals and trackers and everything like that. So yeah, I plan to, definitely do more of it. But by now it very much is just, it becomes easier. So I understand what you're saying with like, it feels like this thing you have to do, but I would say, you know, how often do you not brush your teeth? Because it's just something becomes really ingrained as a habit, it's just, you don't even think about it.
And that's, I guess, what habit change is all about, right? It just becomes this another thing that you do that's super consistent and, you know, brings some reflection. If only brushing my teeth, I'm sure I could make it, but not the same, not quite the same thing.
I've actually got a, I got a video on YouTube, which I'm sure you can link to, but it's me talking about my 10 years journaling and a process, the advantages and everything like that. So I can probably pop that in the show notes.
Yeah, man, I would love that because I do think there is, like you said, there's a resistance around the idea of doing it. And then I'm not going to do it right sort of, you know, message and symbol. And I don't think there's such a thing. It's kind of like meditating. You're choosing to hold space for yourself to do this thing. If you're blank and you're still journaling, you know, that sort of thing.
100%.
Which is just it. So, look, man, we can go in so many different angles. I think this has been such an awesome chat, but the thing that I want to kind of dig into a little bit is you know, mostly working with men, you know, supporting a lot of mentor, I imagine a wide range of issues. Do you think there's something that's sort of pulling them all back together as like an overarching sort of theme that a lot of men are potentially struggling with at the moment, or what it all kind of comes back, you know, as you've read Scattered Minds or, you know, Lost Connections, that sort of thing. Like there's these underlying unmet things going on. I guess I'd love to hear your thought around what some of those common threads are for men, and I guess I mean, it's great that the men are reaching out to you in the first place and some aren't, but I'd love to hear your views on where we think that sits at the moment.
I'd say, you know, obviously there's so many different circumstances and specifics, but I think what links everyone, the men I've seen together, is the stigma around mental health, the challenges in being vulnerable, and this felt pressure across the board that of what being a man is, and these expectations which sort of like, you know, limit their willingness, ability to reach out, or also just form a really healthy connection with themselves, rather than, you know, this one of judgment where they're saying, where they've internalized these different voices saying, you know, like, man up, harden up, you know, a real man is X, Y, and Z.
So being able to kind of thread them by looking at, well, they are, have this, we all kind of have this common thread until we kind of don't, that there's this idea that we're meant to meet this expectation, or we're unable to do a lot of this sort of communicating anywhere else besides potentially with a very small amount, if not only, you know, a therapist, for example, and that being a hard thing to navigate.
Yeah. I'd also like to just highlight that, you know, I talked about when I was younger, finding the internet and internet forums and how that connected people around the world to kind of be honest behind these aliases where they're protected. And that was a great thing the internet introduced. But since then, we've had social media come along and a lot of people, you know, the world has realized how profitable the internet is. So now, you know, the space has been infiltrated by people simply out there to rather than just connect like I was, people out there to make a buck and see people like myself as people to, you know, have pain points that they can exploit. And I'm thinking of, you know, some of the young guys in their 20s that have come to me and said like, okay, I looked online about stuff about confidence and this, and inevitably, if they're a certain age and they use social media, they're going to get fed content by alpha males, Andrew Tate, Red Pill, pickup artistry, and all this stuff that actually is quite damaging because it leaves them feeling like inferior. Like, you know, they see the highest status of man is a guy who has like Lambos and is surrounded by women. So they feel even worse about themselves. Because they're told, oh, that's what all of beautiful women want. And then they also see the worst of it is they can develop more toxic sort of traits, you know, and that's where the whole red pill can kind of lead them down about, like, you know, being negative, psychologically manipulative, things like negging, and just pretty distorted views that really people who are really jaded and heartbroken, who have never healed through it, but really paint all women as, you know, one type, acting in one type of way and having you know, sort of intentions. Mm.
Yeah, and you can see the ripple effect that it has, you know. And if we look to our, you know, caregivers, and if they were taught this is how it is to be a man, and then, you know, they're passed down or not kind of invested enough to see, oh, hold on, you're going down this path, then, you know, creates that recipe for more and more of this thing that we have to figure out how do we reverse. And then ideally there's actually, I imagine this is what happens for me, but I imagine it might be similar for you, is that people that are presenting to clinic in that underlying way, more so the younger people that I'm seeing, is they're like, I mean, this hasn't really got me. Now I'm seeing the consequences of this way of thinking that's got me, or I'm at the pinnacle of going, well, I have to double down on this because I don't know any other way to exist. And I mean, there's that. Do I either give up the idea that I've been chasing, trying to figure out how I belong, or I double down and go, this is how I'm going to belong, and I'm going to be and act this way, and that might get me, you know, some other alpha male friends and a really hot girlfriend, or whatever it might be. No substance. Tricky.
Yeah. But I often say to the guys who point this out, like, I'm, you know, they've identified it because they're seeing me. So I'm stoked. And I, you know, applaud them for being able to see through the bullshit. I've actually written an article on Andrew Tate, which has been really well received as well. Okay. But my concern is with the young men who don't seek myself or you or any other therapists out and just go down that path, you know. But hopefully, you know, by putting out this podcast and the way we create content and, you know, the writing that I do, it's so that even if people don't seek therapy, hopefully they can come across something that points them in the right direction.
100%, man. 100%. And that's why I really like, you know, the whole way that you cut it is it's through that, you know, glimmers of hope and this idea. It's like there's little, you know, I guess these little inner childs within us that if we stop and pause and reflect and journal and actually listen to, then they're going to tell us, hold on, we just want to come back to the simple things like play and being loved and you know, I guess the ability to be seen and heard. And I think, even in the smallest ways of someone seeing a little quote or someone coming across and seeing someone really like-minded that's got this lived experience with ice cream all over their hand trying to get through life, you know, that we can do this sort of thing, and we'll at least start to make those changes. You know, if change doesn't happen. I heard you say that this morning. I was checking you out that It might only take a little bit of those sparks and this kind of conversation as well. And I think that's been a big shift in the last 10 years, right? Of we're starting to talk a little bit more and we need to keep doing it, you know, more and more and more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what would be one thing, I guess, we'll take away that you would want to like put out there to, I guess, everyone, but maybe just like how we can reconnect back with that boy or girl, you know, that inner child? What would be one thing that kind of helps us start that process or, you know, continues to do it with compassion?
I think just seeking support, someone that can facilitate that process. And that can be either through therapist or even aiming to form very genuine connections that go a few notches beneath the surface. And also just working on, you know, getting to know yourself. And, you know, I'm going to say it again, journaling is great because it's so accessible. You can buy a journal with the prompts already in it. You can go on YouTube, look up journaling. I tell clients, like, just don't make it too hard. Just go to Officeworks, grab a lined journal, and that's where you can start. But that requires carving out the time in your day, putting down the phone, you know, going under a bridge or somewhere nice, meditating, or even through, you know, going to a yoga studio where they kind of guide you through a bit of these sort of processes, or, you know, the workshops, like you do the ice baths and are part of that kind of community. Just making the time to connect with yourself and think about, you know, you're a person, you've got a career, maybe you're studying, family, all those things, but you've also got a relationship with yourself.
Yeah. I love that, Ricky. I think that carving out time means that there's space to even like allow that part of you to be seen. So that's beautiful. So Ricky, where can people find you? And yeah, like what's going on for you at the moment? So keep this going.
The website's just boyunderthebridge.com. That has links to my socials. You can get my book, Living Cream. Like the ebook is actually free. Or they can order a physical copy. And then on the website is also have information about my counseling services. So I see people face to face Melbourne, but also over video and telephone, you know, across Australia as well. Then for me, I'm actually working on book two. So that's a big creative project. And getting training for the Camino. I'm going to do the Camino Trail, which is a walk from France to Spain. So 800 kilometers. Really got focusing in on that. So yeah, that's kind of taking up my time at the moment.
Yeah, that's amazing. Dude, I can't wait to hear how that all pans out and super keen for book two. I'll put all that stuff in the show notes and people can come in and reconnect and hopefully they keep taking what they need from these little chats and keep growing and coming back to themselves. So I appreciate you coming on, man. Really honored to have you here.
Yeah. Thank you for having me and great job with everything you're doing as well in Sydney, man. And I've listened to the episodes as well. It's really cool. You're creating sort of like a community of, you know, because therapists generally, you know, they work with clients one-on-one or couples. So you're kind of uniting all us therapists together, which is a really cool thing.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. All right, dude. We'll check in soon.
Do you want to find out more about how therapy can help you kick some goals? Go check out findreasontherapy.com.au or the Find Reason Therapy Instagram page.